This is By the Way, a podcast of Covenant Christian Academy, where we discuss education, discipleship, and books. Welcome back to By the Way. I am John Hayward, your host for this conversation. Today, joining us, we have Catherine Savage. Catherine Savage is the head of school and founder of Philadelphia Classical School in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and also part of sort of a regional cohort of ACCS-affiliated schools in the region. And so if any of you were following that, we have had some regional conferences. Catherine was a part of that. So thank you so much for joining us, Catherine.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about a couple topics related to just parent partnership. But first, could you just tell us some about Philadelphia Classical School?
Sure.
How did it come about? What's it been like? What do you love there? What are you trying to do?
Well, about 10 years ago, I embarked on it was basically a two-year sort of networking and fundraising and all those sort of things, building process to get this thing off the ground. It was sort of a more arduous process of making the case that this is something that was really important for the city and very important for the churches and the discipleship process. So that was about 2 years. And then we started with our first students about 8 years ago, and that was just kindergarten through second graders. And Now we have grown the school kindergarten through 10th grade, and we're on our way to K-12, and we rent space in a beautiful old historic church right downtown. And yeah, it's a beautiful place, and it's right in the middle of the hustle and bustle. And we're drawing families really from all over the Philadelphia city region. There's, you know, they talk about how Philadelphia is sort of a city of neighborhoods. And so PCS pulls from all those different neighborhoods, and they're all very different. So that's really exciting.
Now, aren't you like just a couple blocks away from City Hall and a couple blocks away from 10th Pres?
Yes. We're sort of, kind of actually situated in between those two places, for sure.
I can make a metaphor out of that sometime. I don't know. So what do you think, just with that experience of going from the ground up, is there anything that you think you've perhaps seen about classical schools or just the process? Because again, starting somewhat recently, but yet going from K-2 to then every year adding a grade, sort of any insights that you've noticed about either the model of classical education or anything like that, that you just by having to go through so intentionally building it up?
Definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, on the surface, when you originally approach it, you think about a lot of curriculum type aspects and differences in that way. That's kind of that initial maybe introduction to it. But once you sort of really dive down, there's so much more to that and to all of the, you know, maybe the curriculum is sort of kind of sitting on top of the table, but there's so much to the legs that are holding up the table. And even, you know, the things that might be hiding under the table that are really the substance and affect what you're doing so much more. And so as I've grown in this endeavor, I've started to, I mean, obviously we have great curriculum and probably many of the same curriculums that you guys use too, but yeah. Digging a lot deeper into the pillars that really hold up this kind of education and make it effective and make it transformational.
Yeah. What are, I don't want to run with the metaphor too far, but like, what are some of the legs of the table or those environmental factors that you end up saying, okay, the curriculum's great, but if you don't have these things, it really diminishes the impact of the curriculum?
I mean, I think there's aspects, and you brought me on to, and we were going to discuss parent partnerships. So there's lots of aspects of that. There are parts
of. We'll come back to that. Yeah.
We'll come back to that. But, you know, you think of like school culture and all the habits, the habit forming and the things that start in the earliest grades. The things that, you know, in our culture today, I think there's an attitude of like, oh, they're little. That doesn't really matter that much. It's, you know, no blood, no foul. It's a small thing. But seeing how all those little habits that are formed so early, how they ricochet and ripple out into the big things, and that they indicate the larger heart issues, the larger paradigms. And so I think digging into the small moments, especially as it affects the community, the school culture, the class culture, all of those things, you know, it's not just my child is performing, getting the grades that mommy likes to see on the report card. You know, it's just, it's not that. That's really, if that's all that we do, we haven't done our job.
Yeah. I guess I kind of put myself in a trap, right? Because as I asked the question of like, okay, what's foundational, let's come back to parent partnership later. It's sort of parent partnership is in the mix of all of that, right? Like school culture, right? Not in some sort of like every jot and tittle, like, you know, parents need to love every single thing, but that kind of like partnering and support. So I guess that is pillar, because I think of, like you said, like classroom culture. I know that you've spent a lot of time in how do you train teachers to mm-hmm. train children's hearts. But obviously that's an element where, you know, there can be an encouraging feedback loop with families and the school. And I tell the story about how I just being at Covenant and our pattern of singing and reading scripture made me want to sing more at home, right? So like I don't have students in the school yet, they're all too little. But yeah, but still it was just sort of like that kind of like partnership, but it's not just we'll get back to partnership. But I want to zoom out for a second and say one thing that's always struck me about as we've talked about building a school, Christian education, et cetera. I've been really impacted by how for you, it's very clearly a part of discipleship. Like Christian education is part of Christian discipleship, and not just in let's disciple the children, but also just like churches discipling its members. Thinking about Christian education is a part of that as a how do we live out a robust Christian worldview? And the thing that always sticks in my mind is a story about that is how when you were laying some of the groundwork for PCS, you went to like church young adult groups. So here it's young adults connected to church, but they might not be married yet. They might just be single young adults, or they might be married, but like have no children yet. And yet you were saying like, no, like this is how like young adults should be thinking about Christian education. In a sense, like, I don't know, like now my mind just went to like, maybe we should like talking about Christian education with our high schoolers as they think about their future lives and plans and things like that. So could you maybe talk a little bit about that as far as like, that seems like a good concrete example of, yes, this is a fruit of biblical worldview, discipleship, but could you speak to that at all as far as like—
Yeah, I think that whole concept, what you just articulated was the impetus for me even starting the school. Because, you know, being someone, my husband and I have lived in the city for 20 years and are part of our commitment to investing in this place. You know, it's not because we think it's a cool place to live. It's not because we think that, you know, the restaurants are really great, because when we moved in, they weren't all that great. But it's because that we were just a commitment to, we felt God calling us to invest in the church in Philadelphia. And the church has been small and weak and very transient. And one of the reasons why I went to some of those young adult groups is because, you know, a lot of the churches that are, you know, feed into PCS now have been planted in the last 15 years. Yeah, and, it's really funny. You know, and a lot of those, our parents now were in those young adult groups. And that was a really exciting place to give them the vision of, you know, this is part of the full formational work that we have to do. And thinking about training leaders and elders for the church in the next generation, like, you know, I can't fix everything about what I see maybe in the day to day, but I can play the long game. And yeah. I think classical Christian education is so great about playing the long game. I mean, it's all about that. It's like the slow, the steady fruit that grows later. And so the first time we ever had, this was a few years ago, that one of the people from the young adult group said that I gave the vision for the school at in those first couple years, they told me in the parent interview to come to the school, you know, we weren't even married then when we heard you talk. And we talked later, we said, you know, if we have kids someday, they're going to PCS and you know, here they are. And so, it's so exciting to think like, okay, and you know what, now they're actually going to stay in the city and they're going to stay in their church. They're going to invest in their church in a different way. Hopefully they're going to grow in their understanding of discipleship through partnering with us and through even raising their own children. And then their children are going to then be able to invest in the church in the future. So it's that full process.
Yeah. And I think I was just listening to Tim Keller being interviewed recently. He was talking about how he thinks in light of lots of different cultural pressures and attacks that really just Orthodox Christianity is going to consistently come under. He was like, but you know what? I think we have some good institutions, and I think if we continue to build in those institutions, you know, that'll like playing the long game of really having that vision for the future and future benefits and goodness is really important. Yeah, thank you. That's all kind of like zooming out, and then, you know, still parent partnership isn't the same nitty-gritties of how do we transition between math class to reading class and how we do that classically, but still like parent partnership, really important. I think in our show notes to the podcast, we're going to put a link to the blog that PCS has done. And we kind of like walk through some foundational elements, but in the foundational element, talking about parent partnership, how does this relationship between school and family work? You use this line, right? Which is just, I really like the line. You know, it's parenting is a 24/7 job, right? And just, that's so true. You know, my little ones and think about how they interrupt my sleep. My students usually don't disrupt my sleep in the same way, right? But parenting is a 24/7 job. And here at PCS, or, you know, we have the same vision here at Covenant, we take a couple shifts. Could you talk about like that vision, some things about like, what is it that makes that so just, I want to say essential and important, but also part of me wants to say delightful and like liberating at the same time.
Well, I think there's two different sides to that statement. The one side is that it's only a few shifts. And so as many good things as we pack into our day,
yeah,
if it's not really reciprocated and truly, if there's not truly buy-in on the other side, then like our shifts aren't as fruitful. There's that piece of it of just like, yeah, it's only a few shifts. It feels like, you know, maybe you've paid your tuition and you can check that off the box and your kids are okay, but it's going to take a lot more than that. So I think that's kind of one aspect. But then, you know, the other aspect is we take our shifts seriously and, and we're not just in that sense, okay, make sure that you get an A on this test because, and we'll cram as much knowledge in your brain in this 45 minute period as we can, because that's all we're doing.
We're not just the responsible adults monitoring academic progress.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. It's like, no, we actually are owning our shifts in the sense of you are being formed. You're being formed in the way that we interact with you and the way that we even present the material to you in the hallways, in the lunchroom, and all of those times, those are also formational times. And so, you know, we are going to take our full responsibility for that and take it seriously and be intentional about all those moments.
Yeah. And I can tell you from having grown up in a classical Christian school, being blessed to have that, that's really true, because some of the things that I look back on as really shaping me is me eavesdropping and hearing teachers have conversations with each other just about life or like downtime things. And still that just shaped me as a young man, getting to kind of like hear that mature Christian thinking or even just attitude or processing of things, right? That was not a class. And again, they probably weren't even intentional. I was eavesdropping, right? Like it was just, but being in that environment, plenty of it was intentional as far as ways that they were able to like, you know, like shape me, form me, you know, call me to behavior, et cetera. But that's a great way to articulate it. So with taking the shift seriously, what do you think is some of the aspects of that that can just be challenging, right? But ultimately very fruitful.
Wow. What can be challenging? It's definitely all challenging. It's challenging in the sense of, you know, we, for instance, when you have a lot of students in one building, there's going to be conflict and things like that. So even thinking about like, we use the Young Peacemaker curriculum with our kids for that. And even just weaving all of those elements and that language into our culture and into our classroom, and then coaching the students to use the tools and at the right time. And then, you know, having a systematic process for then when we kind of, okay, now in this grade, we expect you to do this first and use the things that we've given you. I mean, I think it's hard because those emotions fly and you kind of just want it to all end and you want to shut it down. And so, and I think it's easy, especially in our schools, like the kids are overall like obedient, you know, we don't have any major
fruit of that family partnership.
There it is. But in the sense that you still see those underlying heart issues, and it would be easy to just shut it down. Okay. Everyone stop talking. Okay. Everyone just stop it and work on control.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of like, I've regained control of the classroom.
Right.
And
right.
Good. That's enough.
And, yeah. and we're good. But I think, the real challenge is having integrity about really following through with all those steps, which takes time, which takes energy, which takes a lot of coordination among staff. You always have some staff who are really natural with the discipleship elements and some staff who aren't as natural.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And that's fine. But again, as you know, as a leader, you have to sort of coordinate all those elements. And, you know, obviously when you have hundreds of little centers in one place. Yeah. It's challenging.
Yeah, I like that you talk about that in terms of like, that's why, like, it doesn't just come naturally. It doesn't just happen. It takes that commitment to take the shift seriously and not settle just for, well, like, you know, we've taught them math excellently and they are quiet when I tell them to be quiet, but saying, like, no, we wouldn't take the whole shift, and just like doing due diligence with the great trust that parents have given us in giving us so much time with their children.
And also too, if we don't push through, especially in the younger years, you see it come out in the older years, because you can't then control teenagers. That's not any kind of strategy necessarily for discipleship, right? Like, they have to own it. They have to love it. You know, I think that's something that we are trying more and more as we are getting the older students to really, when they move into upper school, get their buy-in, really help them to love and see, give them the vision for what we're doing, and help them to see. It's really special to see the students who've been with me from the very beginning, since they were really little, be able to articulate and get excited about what we're doing and why. So,
yeah, that's great. And definitely, I like trying to control teenagers is not a winning strategy.
No, it's
well, and just the thing I'm so blessed by, right, is I often see that as the upper school dean, right, when I get into like somewhat tense, like difficult, like discipline scenarios, or a lot, especially like student to student, like high school student conflict, is that often I am blessed to be reminding them of things, right? I'm not trying to, in the moment of tension, like start off with, okay, so here's what like reconciliation looks like.
Or preach a sermon in that moment.
Here's a Christ demand. Well, some students will probably say, actually, yeah, he does try to preach. But even trying to tell them, like, in this moment, like, you know, this is what Christ demands of you. I'm just saying, I ask questions like, so what do you think you should say to so-and-so? And they're like, and then they just kind of like tell me, like, well, I think I should probably like say what I did was wrong, and then, like, you know, ask for forgiveness, you know, or that sort of thing. Or even just acknowledging, I'm like, I heard you say yada, yada, yada to so-and-so, like, what was going on? And then they just process. Yeah. I think I was speaking, you know, they just can say, yeah, that wasn't right. You know, it's not just like, yeah. So it's a blessing that there's still lots of that sin in high school, but again, are they processing how to take their sin, how to deal with their sin in a Christ honoring and glorifying way as Christians?
And joyfully. Are they stomping around doing what we say? Are they seeing it as the happy life? Is the good life. What is the good life? It is walking in faith. It is walking in repentance and obedience. This is the beautiful thing. This is what we want you to love and desire. You know, not just do it because we tell you to do it.
Yeah. So thank you. That's a good summary of what it looks like in the school side and like the school vision of what is partnership. How does it work? What would you say if a parent says, that sounds great, that like that's what I want, like that's why I chose this school to entrust all those time and hours with my student with? Because, you know, that is a big trust that we receive. But what would you say if the parent was like, okay, but how do I capitalize on that? How do I get the most out of that kind of partnership?
The area that I think is so important, and especially in our current moment and just the way our culture has gone now, is with media, devices, smartphones, video games. I think this is the biggest issue that I'm discussing with my parents on a regular basis. You know, there's so many aspects that go into this, and sometimes our conversations just stay really what I would consider at a shallow level. For instance, you know, talking about, well, what is the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended minutes for screen time? Or, you know, okay, well, this show is a kid's show, or this is a, you know, approved thing. Well, you know, we're missing the point that all of those kinds of digital experiences are so formational. They create passive learners. They're obviously telling worldviews. They're sculpting your child's worldview. I look at some of the kiddie shows that, you know, occasionally there's a big anti-authority, you know, narrative in there. There's very therapeutic, you know, be your best self. You know, there's all those kinds of things that are going in. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. So, you know, they have their ways. But then, you know, as you get older with the smartphones and things, you could, and I always think about it like a diet. Like, if I was going to go on the Whole30 diet, but I was only going to participate in that diet from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. But then when I got home, I could eat like ice cream and cookies and cake and really, even if it was only just like, okay, only two slices, you know, I'm not going to really get the benefit from the Whole30 diet. Right, because I'm
constantly diet by like time frame. That's not really how our bodies naturally work.
Right, exactly. You're still going to, you know, your body's going to be shaped a certain way. I'm going to have more fat in my body. Like, you know, that's just how it is. And I don't think parents understand how powerful the smartphone situation is. You know, we have a big thing in our school about delaying or not giving a smartphone at all, how detrimental it is to what we're trying to do. You know, and that's another thing too. It's like, if you're going to give your, you know, even middle school student a smartphone, you're kind of wasting your money with the education, because it's going to completely counteract everything that we're doing at school. And I think the last part of it is, it's like, you know, I know a lot of parents end up using those things as rewards. Like, okay, if you, you know, do all your homework during the week and you get your assignments done and you have good behavior at school, then on Saturday you can play video games for 3 hours. And, you know, right there, we have just set up the table. We've set the table for them. This is what the good life is. The good life is,
that's the good thing, and you're earning the good thing.
Right. You're earning the good thing. Like, and I always talk about with parents is, like, the gifts that you give your kids, tell them a story. And so that story is very clear. Like, what you should aspire to is to fulfill your basic responsibilities and then look for entertainment and pleasure and disengagement, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that's the wrong story. And I actually don't think that any Christian parent willingly kind of thinks of that. I think it's we're not really thinking through the stories that we're telling through our rewards and through our free time. Like, you know, we have a big thing at PCS of saying no time is free. It's all God's time. And so we need to use it wisely. And so, you know, this whole concept of do your responsibilities and then you get free time, right? You get to do whatever you want. And I mean, it's just that's not a Christian worldview from my perspective.
Well, yeah. And that's what helpful, because I think, you know, for me, thinking from it, even from like a discipleship or like even like counseling side of things, like one, like definitely there are lots of difficulties that smartphones create for teenagers. That could be a whole nother podcast. And we talked with Walt Mueller some about that earlier. But just on the issue of no free time, right? It's such an opportunity for us as parents, because I can tell, like, I can fall into that habit of thinking, right? We're sort of like, okay, when I'm home, I do the right chores with the kids. I do the right, you know, like chores for my wife. And then, like, haven't I earned some me time? And, you know, again, nothing necessarily wrong with me time, but that sense of the worldview of, like, these are things that I'm paying to get this, like, you know, condoned selfishness or whatever. So I think even there, right, that's an opportunity, especially as I think about teenagers in our upper school, for parents to say, hey, I'm trying to work with you in this area of your life and trying to, like, reframe that story, kind of like, you know, work on that diet, you know, to use your metaphors. But this is something that, like, I'm struggling with you in this, right? Like, you know, like, I need to be reminded of these truths just like you are. And just like, so it's kind of another invitation of not, like, like we said, controlling teenagers can be a difficult strategy to try to work.
I think cultivating love starts early. And so I think about, how did I get my oldest child is 16 now. And I was, you know, how did I get her? She was a pickier eater when she was little. How did I get her to love to eat vegetables? Well, I had to restrict all these other things that might satiate her that gave her that quick sugar fix that might take the edge of the hunger off and give her that quick, you know, you might not taste sweetness in broccoli if you're always getting brownies. Right. And so there is a sense where in those younger years, there has to be some sort of fencing and restriction so that you can develop the love of broccoli, right? Or develop the love of good things. And then as you get older, right, you want to teach them how to, like, make meals with broccoli and maybe cultivate a more higher level palate. But at the same time, you know, I think about this for myself. I just recently did a chapel talk where I talked about even how I like to come home and read news articles. You know, it's almost just like this little piece of information that sort of satiates something, right? It takes the edge off, like, me really wanting to know things deeper and to be connected to my world and to grow in wisdom. These are hungers that I have, but I'm using these inappropriate things to satiate. It's like a little brownie bite. Then when I get to the table, when I open my Bible, when I turn to these richer resources, this richer feast, my hunger is less. No. Right, because I've already sort of taken the edge off with these other things. So that's a whole other conversation too. Yeah. But I've thought a lot about it for myself, honestly, and I've thought about the ways that I, you know, if I'm going to be leading teenagers, like, looking at my own patterns in my own life.
That makes me think again. Just, I really like the analogy of a diet, right? Because we have a culture when we could do another thing on, like, diet culture. Like, it's some sort of, like, do we believe in American, like, Pharisaism and, like, legalism, right? Like, it can be there in, like, diet cultures and, like, with, like, children's diets of, like,
Oh, yeah.
giving your child, like, you know, yellow 42 is like child abuse. Exactly. You know, like, but with the diet, though, what I like about that is, like, there's obviously lots of freedom for Christian families to, like, set different diets, different, like, eating plans, things like that. But at least, like, saying, I like the analogy of whatever diet you're thinking of, let's just be realistic. You can't assume you'll be getting the benefits of eating this diet if you only do that 2/3 out of your day, right? And every evening you're eating absolutely everything. So again, nothing wrong with eating 2 pieces of or brownie bites, right? But let's at least be realistic in saying, like, this has consequences. This has
exactly.
Don't expect, like, you know, education that's based on deep thought, right? And training the affections towards these things, but then, you know, indulging in whatever, it is going to affect the impact of the other thing. You know, it's not like we can silo off our world that way.
Yeah, it's hard to love broccoli when you're eating a lot of brownies, because brownies taste sweeter. You know, it's just, you can't compete with, it's hard to compete with brownies. as a true brownie lover.
Yeah. That's definitely been true in our own household as we raised children and their diets. So that's helpful. I think there's a way for parents to process, okay, like, what are the other factors that they can manage, consider, or look at to get the most out of the partnership with our schools? Any specific resources that is a good go-to that you recommend to your parents in terms of, like, beginning to process this? You know, obviously, like, in something like, nothing really replaces intentional conversations in the home, you know, and churches, but, like, any good resources that you've had of, like, different books or sources to have families think through that kind of diet, you know, media diet issues?
I mean, I know that a lot of people recommend the TechWise Family, and I think that, you know, that is good. I probably would, I don't know if I've really found a book, because I think even what I've done with my own family is maybe even more to the other side than that, in the sense of, like, I have a 16-year-old. My kids don't have any sort of media time at all. And so what the loves that they've cultivated has been really special. And I think it's encouraging for parents even just to see, like, your child won't be deprived of these, you know, like, they won't be deprived and they won't miss it. They actually love other things. And then, you know, even what my daughter has gotten into and then, like, exposed her other friends to, because she's had extra time and things like that. And she actually has a phone now, you know, but the ways that we've scaffolded into that. So I don't know exactly a book that would give a plan, but sometimes it's just being courageous and bold with your own family and knowing that, like, you will reap beautiful fruit of any sort of courageous act that's counterculture.
Yeah, and that just makes me think of Walt Mueller, CPYU, who we had as an earlier podcast guest, has some initiatives that help parents think through those issues and talk through them. And then also CCEF has some good, you know, articles on thinking through different boundaries and guidelines, kind of saying, hey, wherever you fall on that diet, here are some principles that, you know, you need. Or I sometimes with smartphones talk about, like, you know, do you give a 10-year-old a chainsaw, right? My family's answer was absolutely, right? Like, how else is he going to, you know? Other families, right? It's like, no, you don't give it. But everyone can agree, you know, whatever age you can let people use those kinds of tools, that you don't give it to them without boundaries and instruction.
Yeah. And I've been really blessed by my daughter, you know, now that she's kind of coming to the family more as a young adult, like, she's now, the way that she's chosen to use her phone and, like, how she, where she charges it and what, you know, I don't necessarily even have to put a lot of boundaries on that for her, because she has internalized the principle and it's convicting. Like, I'm like, oh, I need to go put my phone down by hers. You know,
No, so it's a blessing to, like as I engage with the students here, sometimes, like, their walk with Christ, and, you know, can inspire and encourage me. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and again, that's where I just think, like, I have been so blessed, having gone to a classical Christian school and then worked at classical Christian schools for my entire working life. It's such a blessing to how I've just been given so much as a parent. Right. So, like, I work with some of our very experienced grammar school teachers, and my children are 3 and a couple, you know, they're very young. Or, like, I work with a lot of high schoolers, and, you know, I've been working with high schoolers for a while, but I don't have my own high schoolers yet. And just the blessing of myself kind of being abundantly blessed. And I feel embarrassed by it sometimes, just how blessed I am to have been thinking about these.
You have been very blessed.
I have been very blessed. Yeah, and just, you know, wanting to be a good steward of that blessing in terms of that feedback loop of how I want to be shaped by the education I've joined in, like, then, okay, I learned how to have this conversation from one of the teachers that I supervise with my own child, and just that, how, since it's a community based on conviction, we're all moving in the same direction, whether we're administrators, teachers, parents, and again, that feedback loop that I mentioned of mutual blessing.
It's a lovely thing.
It is. I think talking about the joy and delight of it is an excellent way to close off our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us. Random closing question. Is there an excellent book that you've read? Because we say, our tagline is, by the way, which we get from Deuteronomy 6, kind of like, you know, like disciple them as you go along the way and walk along by the road. So that's why we call it our by the way. But we say we talk about education, discipleship, and books. And so I just wanted to throw in books at some point here.
Well, I am in the middle of actually a newer book, but it's really, really good. And I'm really enjoying it. So I'll go ahead and recommend it. It's Carl Truman's new book.
Oh, yeah.
Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to look at how we've gotten to where we've gotten, where people in our culture actually think that a man can be trapped in a woman's body or the vice versa. Yeah. You know, like that's a weird statement, but people understand what that statement means. And some people think that's true. Yeah. And how in the world did we get there? And I think he just lays out a wonderful explanation and it's very stimulating.
And just, yeah, no. And he did his research. Like it is remarkable. I heard him in an interview say, he's like, I hope I did my research so well that when people criticize me for my position on this, that they can only resort to ad hominem attacks. He's like, I hope that, they, you know, if they, I don't want them to be able to say, oh, he didn't read this. He doesn't understand so-and-so or reader or this perspective. Hopefully they just say, well, you're a conservative Christian and that's why. That's why, you know, you came to this conclusion. And he's like, nope, I hope they have to resort to that because I've researched it so well and given such a fair handling of it. And I think he's been really successful in that book.
He has. And I think too, he refers to some really larger works like A Secular Age and that I have read and it was really hard to read and get through, although it was somewhat helpful in its categories. And this is like a page turner. It's an easy read for something like that. So I recommend it.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you. And thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Thank you for joining us today for By the Way. We pray that your faith was encouraged, your mind equipped, and your heart engaged, all exalting our great covenant-keeping God, for whom we raise our children. Until next time, be well and enjoy God.